Decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 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 and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with
Glory.
That's correct. And before we get into anything, there was news at the time of this recording that the Menendez brothers, their sentence has officially been said to be relooked at. Now, after the whole Monsters documentary came out on Netflix a couple of months ago, there's been quite a social media frenzy, or I should say, I don't know, trend, as a lot of people have dived into the Menendez brothers' case. This was the two brothers who killed their parents because the father was sexually abusing them for years. And so eventually they actually just murdered their parents to get out of the abuse. And they have now been in jail for 35 years, and they were given life without the possibility of parole. And so with all the public outrage, there has been a... Well, the case has been re-looked into, and so it was announced that they're going to revisit their sentences, and it looks like they're, instead of getting life, will be charged for the two murders, and I think they now have the possibility of parole. I was watching, I don't know who was speaking, if it was a judge or a lawyer or someone, he was saying that, and also because it actually, their murders took place before they were 26 years old, it now means that they actually could possibly get out quite soon, back onto the streets. And it's quite interesting, the brothers within prison have actually, I don't know which brother, but they started like a group to help other prisoners who had been through sexual abuse, in counseling and helping them overcome that. I know the one paints, I think Eric Menendez paints incredible portraits. So they've actually created quite a lifestyle for them. And I think it's quite admirable that they themselves are now helping others who have gone through the same thing that they went through, with counseling and stuff like that. So they might be out of prison very soon. I mean, they've been there for 35 years of their lives. And it was quite a thing because they were actually separated. I think they were separated for 22 years. They were sentenced to two different prisons. They are in the same prison now, if I'm not mistaken. But that's not what we're looking at today. It was just a piece of news that's come up and is all over the headlines. So we will obviously see if they get released or if they will serve a couple of months or a couple more years. But we are dealing with quite a strange mystery today. Yes. It's one where you think something and you think it's going to be something and it's really not. So we are looking at the severed foot mystery. And so there are beaches that surround the Salish Sea, which is between Western Canada and Washington State. And they are quite beautiful to see. And there are beachcombers. They can find, people can go and find shells, build sand castles. They've even found stuff like glass and sometimes even pieces of pottery that wash up on the shore. But in 2007, people started coming across something much more gruesome. Human feet. So where did these so-called feet come from? If I found a foot on the beach, I'd run the other direction. I wouldn't touch it. I wouldn't look at it. I'd just run. I don't like feet already when they're alive and on a human. Now I must see a foot there. No, it's fine. For years, the answer to the so-called severed foot mystery has stumped investigators. There have been thousands of theories about serial killers, human traffickers, that have run rampant online. And so there has been always an effort to sort out the identity of who the feet belonged to and how exactly they ended up on the beaches. Was there a killer at work, or was it something just a more normal explanation? So finally, after poring over missing person records and studying underwater pig carcasses, the regional tides, researchers think that they have the answer to the mystery of the severed foot case. This is a strange story, and we're going to deep dive into it. So on August 20th, 2007, a 12-year-old girl walking along the beach of, I think you say, Jedediah, Island in British Columbia, Canada, came across a blue and white running shoe. The shoe was a men's size 12 and was not just discarded as a piece of trash. Upon closer inspection, the girl discovered that it also contained a human foot. This was the first of the Salish Sea feet. This foot was quickly followed by others. Less than a week later, a second foot appeared on, I think it's Gabriola Island. Police were stunned, especially since both feet were right feet and wearing different shoes, so they couldn't have come from the same person. And I'm going to quote from Gary Cox, who was a part of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and he remarked this statement to the Vancouver Sun that says, "Two being found in such a short period of time is quite suspicious. Finding one foot is like a million in one odds. But to find two is crazy. I've heard of dancers having two left feet, but come on." Since then, more than 20 feet have been found along the Salish Sea, both in British Columbia and further south in the Puget Sound near Seattle. As National Geographic reports, almost all of the feet were wearing tennis shoes and some had hiking boots. As more feet washed ashore, many of the Salish Sea region and beyond started asking the same question. Where are these feet coming from? As feet washed up on the beaches between Seattle and Vancouver, theories about their provenance proliferated. Some speculated that the feet belonged to victims of a shadowy serial killer. Others suggested that it had come from drowned migrants. And there was one theory in the severed foot case claimed that they came from a plane crash. To solve the mystery of the Salish Sea feet, researchers sought to understand the behavior of cadavers underwater, so the behavior of dead people underwater, and the behavior of the Salish Sea itself. In their research, they experimented with pig carcasses as a stand-in for human bodies. Obviously, they couldn't just kill people and use them as experiments, so they used pigs. As National Geographic reports, bodies usually sink, especially if they belong to someone who drowned. Once they hit the seafloor, forensic scientist Gail Anderson of the Simon Fraser University found that cadavers are quickly devoured by sea life like lobster and crabs. Imagine that. You eat a crab and then that crab was eating a human that's at the bottom of the sea. That's so weird.
That makes you a cannibal.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And he said, and I quote, "Anthropods will skeletonize and disarticulate a body quite quickly depending on oceanic conditions." So basically just chew it up. "This means that feet are quickly separated from the rest of the body." From there, the oceanographic professor, Parker McCready of the University of Washington, found that the Salish Sea provides the perfect condition to push the dismembered feet towards the shore. And he quotes, "Things that float at the ocean surface move with the currents, but also are pushed a bit by the wind, and this can be significant in getting to them to shore. The prevailing winds here around the Salish Sea are west to east, and so floating stuff in this part of the Pacific gets blown to the coast effectively." Researchers also found that tennis shoes played a role in the mystery of the Salish Sea feet. Tennis shoes are more likely to float. Thus, the dismembered feet in the tennis shoe made their way to the beach. So the person's underwater, the little crab goes, eats, because he can't eat the tennis shoe, he eats around the tennis shoe, the foot is off the leg, the tennis shoe floats to the top, the wind blows it to the shore. That's the basic explanation. Wow. And I quote again from Anderson, "Feet easily disarticulate, and when they are attached to a flotation device, such as a running shoe, they are easily washed ashore. Notice there are no feet washing ashore in stiletto heels or flip-flops. Also, today's running shoes are much more buoyant than in the past. Given the behavior of cadavers underwater, the currents of the Salish Sea, and the buoyancy of today's tennis shoes, investigators believe that the puzzle of the Salish Sea feet has to be perfectly logical. The final piece, however, was who did these feet once belong to? because 20 feet is a lot of people. So, a foot was found inside a Nike shoe in British Columbia in 2017. As National Geographic reports, investigators were able to use DNA to match many of the feet to a name. They found that most belonged to missing persons. The vast majority had been missing for more than a year, and one of the feet found belonged to a fisherman that had been missing since 1987. In many cases, it was clear that the missing people had died from accidents or suicides, including a woman who had jumped from a bridge. We found, this I'm quoting British Columbia Coroner Service spokesperson Bob McLintock, and he said, "We found there is nothing suspicious in any of them. It appears that the feet became disarticulated from the body naturally with time as the bodies decompose and were eaten by the sea life or other marine organisms." He then went on to further explain, "The material in the running shoes or hiking boots is too tough for anything to eat through, and some of them have air in them or rubber soles that cause them to float." In other words, the story of the Salish sea feet is simple, if tragic. One, investigators believe that people who died by accidents or suicide ended up in the water where arthropods naturally disarticulate their feet. Modern-day tennis shoes made them buoyant materials, floated to the surface with the current of the sea pushing them to shore. And I quote again from this coroner, he says, "You don't get to have many happy stories if you are in the coroner's service. This is as happy as it gets. Though the feet may continue to appear along the coastline of places like Vancouver and Seattle, it appears there is no cause for alarm. The Salish sea feet are not the work of a serial killer, but of crabs and lobsters." See, I told you this is not where you would think it would go. Because the first thing I thought was some funky serial killer killing people and having, I don't know, cutting off their feet and letting them float to shore. But no, it's just... Although, how many people are jumping off and committing suicide and dying by accident that there's 20 feet that have already floated to shore? Although, that's between 2007 and now. So, I suppose that is a long time.
It is a long time.
What I am confused about is the guy, the fisherman, they said went missing in 1987. Why did his foot only come now?
Yeah.
You see, that one doesn't make sense. It makes sense if someone, like, I mean, I know it doesn't take 5 minutes for them to eat the body, but if a person died, I'd say maybe a week or two later, that's when you'd expect the foot to float. But, like, literally 30 years later, that's when... 20 years later. That's when the foot... That one, for me, is suspicious. That's, for me, he disappeared in 1987, but I don't know if he was in the ocean in 1987.
Yeah, look, this whole story could be a nice spin on a cover-up for people being thrown in the water.
Well...
You never know.
You never know. But, you see, yeah, I don't know. So, with him, I feel like he disappeared and was thrown in the water closer to the time when the foot was found, because there's no way it took the little lobsters 20 years to eat that man's body.
Yeah.
And then only the foot floats to the top. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you.
Unless he was, I don't know, shipwrecked in a cave somewhere and eventually the body went in the water. I don't know. That one, for me, that's a suspicious one, because there's no way it took 20 years for the foot to float to the top of the water. The other ones, I mean, it all makes sense. The fact that it's all tennis shoes and they explain with the rubber, it all does make sense. And I suppose the lobsters do make sense. But like I said, not what you expect. You're expecting some sadistic serial killer and you get crabs and lobsters eating human flesh. Which I didn't know that they did. I don't know
why. Actually, I also thought about that. I found that quite interesting.
I don't know if crabs and lobsters eat human. I thought they were herbivores.
So I guess it's a two-way relationship. We eat them, they eat us.
Yeah, that's very scary. I don't know crabs. I really thought a crab was a herbivore. Let me Google.
Why would you think that?
I don't know. Is a crab a herbivore? I didn't even know how to spell herbivore. No, they're omnivores. Okay.
So they eat both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meat and...
I learned something, because me, I thought crabs were eating seaweed.
Yeah.
And lobsters were also eating seaweed. I did not know they would... Oof. okay, so now I'm definitely not going to the beach.
Wow.
Next thing, the crab's eating my toe.
Wow.
You see, it's fine. This is why I stay on the shore. But I'm also scared there's a crab in the sand and you sit on it and it'll pinch your bum. So you see, I don't like the beach.
Such a job.
What? No, it's not. Have you seen those things' claws? That thing will hurt you.
I know.
And I'm allergic to them, so I just want to stay far away from them. Thank you very much.
I suppose.
Yeah. But anyway, I've learned something new. That tennis shoes float and that crabs eat human. Who knew? I'll think that... Oh, not that I even order crab sushi, but I'll think of that next time I order sushi. Wow. Well, that's the mystery of the severed foot of the Salish Sea. Again, really not what I expected. When I came across this case, I was expecting, you know, like some big serial killer mystery.
Yeah.
Crabs. Wow. Would make for a good movie. But twist it and make it the serial killer one, not the crab one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that is it for the show. We hope you enjoyed. Otherwise, we will see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.